Good day, everyone. My name is DeYvonne Rivers, and it's Birth Mom's Real Talk Podcast, the platform where birth mothers share their journey, their story of grief, trauma, bringing that child into the world. And I'm so happy to have with us today, Barbara. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you, Yvonne. I'm thrilled to be here.
Very good. Well, we want you to kick it off and give us a snapshot of your life and your story of growing up, maybe from high school, about your family and leading up to when you became a mother. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. That was a long time ago.
You still remember. I know you do.
Absolutely. I've dredged it all up. That's part of the healing. I was the oldest of four children in a fairly prominent family in a very small town. And I was kind of an introvert, and my parents were more doers, and I was more of a beer. So I always had a sense that I was letting them down in some way. I really had an ambivalent relationship with my mother. She was my best friend, the source of music, which is very important in my life. Mm-hmm. But she was also my verbal abuser.
Wow. Wow.
And then my father, as it was back, I was born in the mid-40s. So back in the 50s, a time of great conformity, my father was working most of the time. Mm-hmm. And I kind of idealized him, but I didn't feel I could quite live up to his expectations either. Mm-hmm. Our family never talked about feelings. And I remember listening to your story and how your family was silent too.
It was the brick wall, Barbara. It was like I was talking, did you hear me? Did you hear me? And you know, did you hear me?
I know. And it was part of the times. Like I said, it was a very conformist time. And maybe they never learned.
Right.
What they learned was to have a stiff upper lip.
Absolutely.
And don't tell anyone outside the family,
yeah,
right? So I was pretty immature, and I was only 17 when I left for college. Mm-hmm. And very naive. My mother had never given me the talk, even though I tried to get her to, so I knew nothing.
Were our mothers given the talk, Barbara?
Probably not.
I think generation upon generation, we're all saying that my mother didn't tell me. Well, she probably didn't know because she hadn't had it.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think my parents were older than most of my friends' parents, too.
Okay.
My mother was in her mid-30s when she had me, her first.
Okay.
And my dad was in his 40s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they were almost from the Victorian era.
Okay.
One does not speak about such things,
mm-mm.
Right?
Mm-mm.
So I went away to college, and when I came home for Christmas vacation, my parents went to the office party, and I stayed home with my brothers and sister, had a lovely evening, and was awakened by my mother in bed with me, and she, crying, told me my father was having an affair, and then she proceeded to reveal his secrets that she had kept all of their marriage, and it was a loss of innocence for me.
Wow.
It just totally rocked my world. And I went back to college, but
go back and we say that revealing of those secrets held for so many years. And but what transpired? So you said you woke up with her in your bed with you sharing those stories. So
yeah,
there was, what happened the next morning?
It blew my mind.
Okay.
She acted as if nothing had happened.
Oh, okay.
All ready for church, best suit, pearls, hat, you know, the bit.
Okay.
My father waiting in the car to drive the whole family. No one spoke.
Mm-hmm.
I was dying inside that I was going along. And then my father kind of coaxed me to their room saying, Barb, I want to talk to you. And I had this mixed feeling of like a thrill that he was going to confide in me because he never did. But also fear because I knew this about him. And he proceeded to say, there's nothing to worry about. Your mother overreacts sometimes. It's nothing. It's like, and that was the moment I realized one or both of my parents is lying to me. And that was a hard one.
Yeah.
It just
it forced you to face it. It forced you to face it. It was a
total loss of innocence.
And
so I went back to school, and unfortunately my mother continued to keep me in the loop of their divorce, of their problems, because I was going home on weekends to support her and not doing my homework, not, you know, being late for classes. I remember one day, one Friday evening, I showed up. Mother was fixing dinner, and Dad loved the heart of the iceberg lettuce. And so she cut that off and sent me to give it to him. He was in the bathroom getting ready for his weekend with his girlfriend.
So your mother sent you into the bathroom with some lettuce?
Yes, she thought she was going to win him back with a piece of lettuce.
In the bathroom?
Yeah, well, I knocked on the door, but still, it was just so unbelievably insane.
Wow.
I was losing my mind.
Wow.
And I think, you know, her involving me in it and was not the best thing to do.
Right.
In many ways. Right, but I think my brothers, too, felt that they were drawn in and had to protect her or support her because it was just too much for us.
Right.
So, yeah. And
so
then,
how long did that go on? You know, that you and your siblings were whatever in between.
It was that whole spring, I think. And later in the spring, he came to tell me that they were going to get a divorce. And when he told me, he was saying, you know, I've found someone, you know, we never argue. We love each other. She wants to be a mother to you children. And I thought I was going to vomit. Something about that just was so deep. And I was thinking partly, I understand I can't get along with her either.
Right.
But I certainly didn't want someone else to replace my mother.
Yeah.
So I kind of went into a deep depression. And I also think I wanted to escape my parents. I thought I just wanted someone to love me. I wanted to get married and live happily ever after.
Take me away. Cow gone. Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. And, you know, I think when I was in college, my father used to, before this happened, he would come and take me to dinner if he was in town in business, or me and my roommate. And I was starting to think that he actually loved me, that he liked me. So I think I felt the betrayal personally too.
Yeah, right. How could you not? I mean, think about it. Well, he's your dad. And just as you say, you wanted people to love you.
Yeah.
And show it in one way or another.
Yeah.
And if you weren't getting that, it's like, well, I'm not getting it. So I'm betrayed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Typical feelings.
And so like a lot of young girls, I think I was very lonely. I had learned not to trust people from my parents. But I also mistook lust for love, I think, when young men paid attention to me.
Right.
And also, I'd never been allowed to say no.
Wow. What does that mean? You've never been allowed to say no.
My parents were very controlling, and I was never allowed to, if I tried to say no or argue or ask a question, I would be punished. So
you never say no to them?
I never said no to them. Okay. And I think that carried over. I was just too passive, too depressed, and I had some fantasy that I would escape them. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself pregnant with Vicky's birth father. And not only did he step back as if it had nothing to do with him, both my parents did too.
Mm. How was that when you told them? Tell me the circumstance.
God, my mother, I went home. Oh, first, I went to the, I have to tell you this, I went to the student clinic for pregnancy tests, right? They didn't have home pregnancy tests then.
So. No. Some of the things then. Right now, you know, home or whatever, or instantly and so forth. Oh, that was, go ahead.
So I went to the doctor at the student clinic, and the next morning I could not get out of bed. I was depressed. I was having a little morning sickness, something. Mm-hmm. My roommate came and said, "Get out of bed. You shouldn't be here alone like this. Kennedy was just shot."
Oh, wow. That day, January 22nd?
It was 63? November of 1963.
Wow.
And So I was processing that grief all day, along with my fear.
Wow.
It was too much reality.
So
I went home for Thanksgiving soon after that. And I kept trying to avoid telling my mother, but soon she kept asking, "What's wrong? What's wrong? Something's wrong. I demand you tell me." And so we were out to dinner, and she followed me into the restroom and said, "One more time, you have to tell me, something's wrong." So I blurted it out, "I'm pregnant." And I could almost see her face of disgust. Mm. But what shocked me, she wasn't disgusted that I'd had sex. She was disgusted that I'd gotten pregnant.
How did you distinguish the disgust between one versus the other? How did you figure
Because
that out?
She asked, "Why didn't you use something?"
Ah.
Or "Didn't you use something?" And that was her only question.
Really?
And she'd never told me anything.
Right. So your response could be, "What was I supposed to use?"
So I was silent, and then when we got home, she spoke to me again and said, "You have to tell your father." And so I called him, and the person who was kind and asked how I was was my stepmother, his girlfriend.
Oh, so he had moved out of the house by then.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was with her. They were not married yet, but he was living with her in our small town.
Okay.
So that was a little, I didn't take that in at the time, but I see it as ironic now that she was the person who said, "Oh, Barb, oh, I'm so sorry. What can we do something to help you in some way?"
How was that? So when you, now your mom knows, now your dad knows, and his girlfriend knows.
Yeah.
So what was the next steps?
So, what did happen next? I think my mother, the way she figured out to help was, the doctor who had delivered my brothers and my little sister lived in Arizona. And her daughter had been a cello student of my mother's, and mother had been a second mother to her when she and her mother didn't get along. She was someone she confided in. And so she suggested that I go to where they live, that they could be family for me while I'm away.
So you were the girl that went away.
I was one of those girls, yeah.
Okay.
And what my father did, he made an appointment for me to speak to a high mucky muck lawyer. That was not pleasant. And find out my options. And of course, I had already decided that he told me you can keep your child and risk being outcast and all of this, you know, all those provincial ideas. You can abort your child or you can give your child up for adoption. And I said, I couldn't do that. I wanted to give her up for adoption.
What year
and
was
of course,
it?
I didn't know it was a girl. It was 1963.
Okay.
This is before the birth control pill. Even
before Roe versus Wade.
Before Roe versus Wade. Yeah. So I don't know how he thought I was going to.
You know, that's what my mind is thinking. What was the wheels turning back there? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. I think probably as now, if you have enough money, you can probably get one, right? It's the people who don't have money who suffer from these rules.
Right.
So the other thing my father did was he cashed in a life insurance policy he had taken out when I was born and gave me the money.
Okay.
And then, so that was as much as they could help. My boyfriend, he was an alcoholic, I think. And so he showed up drunk. Falling down drunk. I think he was full of guilt, but he didn't offer to marry me or help in any way. Well, he did. Actually, he said he would help. He would send money or whatever, but he never did. And I remember I called him once because I'm O negative and my baby was O positive.
Okay.
So I called to find out his blood type, because sometimes you can reject the child if you have the O negative, O positive thing going on. Fortunately, that didn't happen. I guess it's the first birth, you're fairly safe, both of you. So I went to, here's another cliche, I went to the Florence Crittenden home in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay. Those names.
Oh, yeah. And so I actually didn't stay there except the last month. I stayed with a family who had twins and helped them take care of their little family and just did lighthouse work and was part of their family for a few months, which was probably a healthy thing to do.
Yeah. Because how old were you at that time now? How old were you?
I was 19 now.
Okay.
And then at Florence, the reason I chose going to Florence Crittenden, I had that choice and the choice of a private arrangement. I wanted to be around other young women going through the same thing. And that was such a wise choice for me to see I wasn't completely alone and to let go of some of the shame to see this wasn't just me who was a bad person and ashamed to my family.
Were those shame and bad person, were they actually verbally spoken, or you just got that idea of the response to you saying you're pregnant?
It was prior to getting pregnant.
Okay.
When my mother became angry with me, I think she was really, now I realize she was really angry with my father, but she would take it out on me and call me names and tell me I was lazy and unappreciative you know, all of these names. And actually my brothers and my father also made me feel that way because they would call me names when we were eating dinner because I was chubby. And so they would call me all these names too. So I was kind of, I was set up pretty well to feel a lot of guilt
and
shame. You
were in a lot of sense beaten down.
Yeah, that's what my daughter always says.
With your self-esteem, beaten down. Yeah.
Yeah.
When people, and on the how I characteristic, when people call you out of your name, of who you truly are, if enough of that is coming and poured on you, you may start to believe it. Oh, yeah, they're right. And you believe it about yourself.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important, as you mentioned, of being around these other young ladies. And so you got, hey, I'm not alone, number one. And number two, you can help each other to lift your spirits. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a good choice. Mm-hmm. And so after I had her, well, the other thing, you know, back then they gave you ether. Mm-hmm. And they gave me ether right before I finished giving birth, and she was gone when I woke.
And that I didn't have that particular experience. What I know of that is if you don't know about it, like it doesn't exist.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Like they're afraid you'll change your mind. They kept voicing it as if it were to protect me, but I think it was to protect the commodity.
So when you say you woke up, so she was gone. So what was said to you? Did anybody say anything?
I kind of, you know, when you walk in a room and you hear the silence and you know the conversation stopped.
Yeah.
When you walked in the room, that's how it felt when I woke.
Yeah.
And so the doctor said, you had a girl. We're just removing the afterbirth.
Okay. You had a girl. That's it.
So, yeah. So I said something, and this was something I just heard in a movie or something. Mm-hmm. I asked, does she have all her fingers and toes? Is she okay? I thought, I don't know why I asked. And the doctors asked, are you going to see her? And I said, yes.
Okay, you had a choice then.
Yeah, I got to see her later through a window, but I never got to touch her.
Okay.
So he said, she's going to have a little trouble with her lip. And then I realized that my boyfriend had a cleft palate and he had a mustache and there was a little scar, but I never thought of anything. You know, I have scars from falling down, whatever.
Right, right.
And so I asked, oh, does she have a cleft palate? And he said, yes. So then I knew. And that's when I thought, oh no, this is going to be hard on a little girl. Girls have so much pressure to be beautiful, all this nonsense. And I realized in that moment, oh my gosh, he had probably went through bullying as a child. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to protect her from that. And so I started asking questions about, you know, maybe I should keep her, you know, how is this going to affect her? So,
well, those questions you asked the doctor, Ermi, was there any kind of a resolution or surgery that could help her at that early age?
Well, I did. Yes. Apparently they do surgery at some point when, at first, I guess it's hard to use bottle or to nurse.
Right.
Until it's closed. Mm-hmm. So I did ask the family friends who lived in that town. Mm-hmm. Her husband was my mother's OB, and I told her, I don't think I should give her up. You know, I think I need to protect her. And she said, oh, I think she's going to need both a mother and a father. She's going to have surgeries. I think you should stick with the plan. And so, and she was a grown-up,
Right. You know? Right.
So that I thought, okay, but I still asked the agency as well, you know, is how is this going to affect her? Is she still going to get this wonderful family you've been mm-hmm. telling me that will spoil her and
right.
give her all this love?
Right.
So, anyway, I did end up relinquishing her, but I insisted on naming her.
Okay.
I gave her the name Victoria with my middle name Anne,
okay.
and her birth name's her birth father's last name.
Okay.
And
so it was a closed adoption.
It was a closed adoption.
Okay.
I couldn't search for her until I think it was like in the 90s when I learned that Arizona was opening up the records.
Okay.
So,
were you able to send anything in through the years for her at her majority age to know where you were or all about
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I did okay. that. Okay. I registered mm-hmm. once there were agents, you know, those birth registries.
Mm-hmm.
And but never heard anything.
Right.
So actually Vicky told me that if I hadn't searched for her, she would have never searched for me.
Did she tell you that?
She grew up believing that I had taken one look at her and thrown her away.
So give me an update, like did she have surgeries? What was the status
she
of
had
her?
Yeah, okay. she had multiple surgeries
okay.
until she was, you know, 18, and she said,
okay.
no more. I'm through with this. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was very painful, and she believed her bullies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why the adoption agency would have told her parents that I probably gave her up because I couldn't afford her surgeries. That was a lie. I found in my records when I was searching that they wrote down that the birth father didn't know. And I knew he knew, and I knew I'd told them because
right.
I checked on my blood type, on mm-hmm. the blood type.
Mm-hmm.
So there were quite a few mistakes
right.
In the records.
So she's thinking all the years
not knowing
you, of all those situations of first look at her, that's when you placed her.
And she, and of course, like you said, if you believe your bullies,
it's so
painful.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
mm-hmm.
yeah, she believed her bullies.
Right.
She believed it.
Right.
And so that was not a good thing. That was
right. So how did you find her? How did you, what did your search? How did your search take you to find her?
I made a trip. Actually, my brother was taking his Boy Scout troop to the Grand Canyon,
mm-hmm.
and I volunteered to go along as a chaperone, and
mm-hmm.
I flew into Phoenix, and I went to the agency in person.
Okay.
Because I thought the records were open now. I didn't know how difficult it
right.
was.
Yeah.
So I totally walked in the door, spoke to someone, and she said, "I'm sorry, I can't help you." So I went back to my motel room, a little wilted, and looked through the phone book, and I found a search agency.
Okay.
And I called them, and I'm so thankful I did that. They had experience. They guided me through the whole process. They assigned me a search partner who had
mm-hmm.
already found her own child.
Okay.
And for 4 years, I worked with my search partner looking through records, yearbooks,
mm-hmm.
registries.
Yearbooks, yeah, remember that.
And finally, and I wrote to the court, I wrote to the adoption agency. The first thing I received, finally, actually, it took 2 years to get this.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happened for a year. I wrote a second time, and I finally got pictures of her that her adoptive parents had sent to the adoption agency.
Okay.
And learned her name was Vicky, the name I gave her.
Wow, they kept
and,
that, yeah.
It just felt, my voice is breaking.
Yeah.
That was so beautiful. I felt like, oh, they let me name her. They let her keep the name I gave her.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then slowly it unfolded. Finally, we got her parents' first names. And the fact that they had married in Southern California in this 10-year period of the 70s, I guess, or the 50s or 60s, whatever. And so we started going through microfiche, which is alphabetized by the husband's last name.
Okay.
Looking for two first names and then looking across at ages, approximate ages. And my birth partner started with the A's and I started with the Z's and we were going toward the middle. when I started that search, I was just plunged back to being that 19-year-old girl who had just buried every feeling. And I felt that all of that unworthiness, all of that all over again. So I went, I found a therapist.
I felt
like I was burdening my friends too much with all of it. And so that really helped me through the search. And my search partner told me, you know, when you find her, you are prepared for this, but she's not. She's going to be in shock. She won't be expecting this. Be patient. She's going to have a lot to process. So I feel really fortunate that I had all of that counseling.
Yeah.
And the gift of that time was when I started telling my secret. I started telling my story and other women told me theirs.
Right. Because it felt safe once you tell your story. It feels give them that safety net there. Oh, wow. You went me too. I heard a lot of me toos. Before the Me Too movement.
It's a different Me Too.
It's a different Me Too.
But so healing and so beautiful because it wasn't just through, you know, adoption or it was miscarriages, abortions, stolen children, just so many ways that we all grieve.
Yes.
Together.
As you say, not being validated, not being feeling worthy. It's like, it was a Monica or it's like, and really the whole thing of not only did the girls that went away, being, I say, put aside into a home or whatever. It wasn't, I didn't go there. It went homes for me. That's another story. But anyway, of set aside, being set aside because almost like, well, going to the room, going to the corner, you know, because you have to be set aside because, you know, you can't, just all of that. Yeah.
Well, and the damage of hiding that inside myself for all that time. And it just, the secret, I don't know whose
secrets
quote it
keep
was.
You sick.
Yes,
secrets keep you sick.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's worse than actually what happened.
Yes. It is. It is.
And feeling like, If anybody knew who I really was inside, they would have nothing to do with me.
Right.
So I have to hide who
I am. Right. And being fearful if you do share, well, okay, I'm going to lose them because they're going to go away because it's going to tell them whether they don't want to be with me or love me anymore and all of that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was just, it's a terrible thing. So, So I found her and we talked for an hour and a half the first time I called. And then
was it a cold call or did she knew you were calling or what?
No.
Tell me the circumstance.
So, yeah, my search partner found her parents.
Okay.
And they lived, she had lived within 50 miles of me in the Bay Area of Northern California all her life, practically. Mm,
okay.
They had moved away from Arizona. And so she called me. I found them. I drove to the little town. I left work and drove to the little town. And it had a little Norman Rockwell center in the middle with the county clerk's office or something, okay. You know. Uh-huh. And I walked in there not knowing what I was going to do, but it just came to me. I'm going to ask for her marriage certificate because okay. She's 30. She's uh-huh. probably married. And I paid my fee, and a few minutes later, I was walking out the door with her marriage certificate.
Wow. Okay.
Like,
okay.
Wow. Somebody's guiding me here because it was just, yeah, it was like, and I felt like, yeah, this is momentous. How do I feel? Mm-hmm. What's going on? Mm-hmm. It felt like grace
mm-hmm.
that yes. I had. That I had this in my hand.
And yes, yes.
So then it was another big search because I did find on her marriage certificate the college she and her husband went to.
Okay.
And that they lived in Southern California. So I had to search through. I think the LA area must have 20 different area codes. And no internet.
And see,
right?
We're talking there here, Barbara, in 2022. A lot of people don't know what a phone book look like. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And you had to find a phone book. You had to go to a library to mm-hmm. find a phone book for mm-hmm. another area code.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So that was a journey. And then when I finally found their names,
mm-hmm.
I made the call. I was scared okay. to death. I made the call. Her husband answered, and she was out with the girls for the evening. So I just said, oh, okay, I'll call her back tomorrow, you know, right. And he didn't seem interested in taking a message.
Right. And I don't know whether you want to leave that message or not.
Yeah. So, and that was something my birth partner told me, make sure you're speaking to that person
uh-huh.
only. They yeah. are the one who has the right to make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I called about 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning, thinking that was late enough, but, you know, not too early, not too late mm-hmm. before she'd be out. And so, yeah, it was a cold call. I think she was in shock.
I think she was. Had to be.
I know yeah. she was. Yeah. And, we just.
So what did you say?
I said, is this Vicky, you know, in her name?
Mm-hmm.
And before I told her who I was, I said, would you write down this number in case we're cut off? Because a lot of times I was told that she might accidentally slam down the phone or on purpose and then regret it later,
mm-hmm.
maybe decide later.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and of course, her first thought was, oh, I won a contest. But then when she came back, wrote down the number, I said, I had told her my full name, but that meant nothing. I said, I have been searching for the child I gave up for adoption in 1964. And I believe, and my voice cracked. Mm-hmm. I believe I'm your birth mother.
Pause.
And she said, oh, wow. I mean, she was definitely in shock.
Wow.
And
wow.
She told me later that that she had all this fear of rejection. She still had resentment. But mm-hmm. hearing my voice crack,
mm-hmm.
she felt sympathy for me. She
wow.
felt my pain too.
Wow.
And so I you know, she buried her pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And accepted my call. And we talked to Dr. Talk. And then the next day she did call back. Even though we talked for 2 hours, the purpose of that call was to ask me to back off because she wanted to talk to her parents. She didn't want to hurt them.
Okay.
And of course, and I had been prepared, right? Felt like, oh, sure, of course, it's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to set the pace.
Right.
I believed that I was prepared for anything and for her to reject me if she wanted or whatever. So I did. I totally agreed. You set the pace. I'm just glad, you know, if you want me in your life at all, that's yours, your decision. But I just wanted to know you're okay. But probably the truth is I would have died if she had rejected me.
It would have been hurtful. Yes. It definitely would have been hurtful.
So yeah. Anyway, but I took heart from the fact that we talked for another 2 hours.
Okay.
And then after she spoke to her parents and they were really great about it.
Okay.
And if they had any concerns, they hid it well. They and I got to meet them. They were lovely.
Okay.
And kind of saw me as another daughter. They were quite a bit older than me.
Okay.
So
what year was that you found her?
In 1994, when she was 30, the year she turned 30 and the year I turned 50.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how has it been?
So at first, you know, I was used to having a superficial relationship with my parents and my family, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought that was what a relationship was. But she now says that we were both hiding ourselves and lying to each other about how we felt and who we were. When we met, it was almost like the new baby bond. We couldn't keep our eyes off each other. We kept touching our hands or a shoulder. I mean, it was like a honeymoon period.
And the union has different phases. Yes.
Yeah. And so then she lived in Southern California. I was in Northern California. She hadn't had a child yet. So we were able to visit back and forth quite a bit at first, the first year or two. And it was what I was used to, you know, a superficial relationship. Mm-hmm. And I would sense a little bit her frustration with me, but I was used to that because that's how my parents always felt, right? What really happened is we started writing a memoir together. And when we started sharing our stories, our secrets, we started getting closer and closer. It's like stitching a mend, you know, with a needle and thread,
right,
and just getting it little. Yeah. So it was so funny at first. I remember she asked me to write about how I got pregnant. Well, okay. I met her father. It was a blind date. I didn't really want to go on it. I got talked into going, and then I was pregnant.
Suddenly, that one time.
Did something happen in between all those months? Well, I don't remember. I had blacked out so much.
Wow, okay.
But when you're writing, you keep having to dig deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
And both of us just kept digging deeper and deeper. And so that really has, I think that really helped us to get close.
Right. You became vulnerable with each other.
Totally.
We peel back the layers of who we truly are and start sharing and being able to share, even though how uncomfortable it probably was. Yeah. That's what true intimacy is.
Yeah.
When you share your good, bad, ugly, and indifference, I like to say, and they still love me.
I know.
Yeah.
And it's so scary for both of us still to say something that we might hurt the other person,
right.
But it's still the truth.
It's still the truth.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that hurts. It's like, it's an echo chamber, right? Echo chamber of empathy.
Yes. But you know, Barbara, I say also to build a true relationship of any sort, you have to be transparent with people. You have to be vulnerable with people. And put it out there bit by bit, as you say, with it. And you gradually, because think about it. And this is how I think about it. When someone shares their deepest secrets, oh, wow. They really want to know me and sharing who they are. So it really comes back. I look at it as a twofold. Well, if you shared this, well, I can share this. It's back to the me too. It's back to the me too. When you start sharing with each other, or you may not share until the other person first shares something. But when you start having that interaction with each other, oh, wow. And you're peeling back the lies, the secrets, no more. Because see, no one can hold anything over you if there's nothing to hold over you.
That's the truth. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where the freedom comes. Did you feel free? How do you feel now about your relationship with
your my God.
Baby?
Yeah. She's like my best friend.
Yeah. See, that's awesome.
And she said the same thing, that she doesn't think she'd had such an honest relationship with anybody else in her life.
Right.
So it's, and it's what you're talking about. It's a gift we give one another, I think, to a piece of ourselves. This is me.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm trusting you to see.
That's
me.
It. Building trust.
Yeah.
Building trust. Absolutely. Yeah. And even, you know, the whole scenario, and I say scenario, the whole constellation of adoption, there's so many secrets and things not told and all of that anyway. You have to first overcome that. And you can only overcome that by dialogue. Not that I have the full prescription. There is no playbook for this with adoption and reunion. There's that roller coaster. Sometimes I fall off. Sometimes I get back on. Sometimes I just lay there. You know, it's like that's how it is based on what today is. But when you've got that transparency and you open yourself up, I'm here for you to share with you anything. That's what I say to my son. Anything. With absolutely. That's wonderful. Any last thoughts, Barbara?
I'm curious. How long have you been in reunion? And did it take a long time to get that true trust?
It's still going on. It's still going.
Yeah.
To me, it'll be lifelong.
Yeah.
To me, I've been in reunion 4 years. 4 years this year.
Oh, that's not
not quite
as long.
4 years.
Yeah,
not too long. And but yet and still, I came in the beginning as like, here I am. I'm transparent, complete book, open. Ask me anything. Will hide nothing from you, because along with it, not really knowing all of what his life was coming on with, I wanted to make sure I am here to answer any and every question that you never have to wonder, never have to wonder. Can I say this? Or is it going to be a retribution? Whatever, you can say anything. Say anything.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time and being come, I'm here. One of the greatest things I think I've heard from my son, you're there to support me, and I'm so proud of you. And I tell him, I'm so proud of him.
Oh,
you know, because back again, I pivoted out of that. When I broke out of that dysfunction. Out of my family.
Yeah.
When I left high school and went to college, because I knew I had to move forward from that. I couldn't be that brick wall to children I had, or just in relationships, and knew that dialogues had to come. And only with the constant conversation do you steadily build that trust, that intimacy. So to me, it's lifelong, because adoption is lifelong. This is forever. Yeah. This is forever. So yeah, so we're growing. My son and I are just growing and growing and growing. And that's how it's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. I feel like my daughter is a gift to the world.
Mm.
And she's probably my greatest accomplishment in this mm-hmm. world is to bring this beautiful human being into the world who strives to always do her best and to give back to the world.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this and to think this was my shame.
See? I mean, when we truly look in perspective of what we truly have, people attempted to put shame on you when you were gifted, you were birthing a gift to the world.
Yeah,
a
absolutely.
Gift to the world. And so if I had to say, and I say this all the time to birth moms and whatever out there, is believing you are worthy. Look at some of the titles of the Birth Moms Real Talk podcast. All of them tell a story. I will always be a mom. Yeah. I am worthy. They tried to put it on me. You know, in other words, shake off that shame. It's not going to be done overnight. It's not going to be, but give yourself that time to constantly be working on it and working on it and working on it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much, Barbara, for being a guest on here.
Thank you for inviting me. Vicki and I actually have started a podcast. Too,
okay.
And
okay. I'd love to have you on the podcast with mother and daughter.
And we'd love to have you on ours. This season, we are interviewing people who inspire us.
Okay.
And the work you're doing to help our communities is just wonderful.
I would love to. I would love to.
I did want to mention, I was thinking of one of your hot topics.
Okay.
Of what is my idea of holding space for my child.
Yes.
And I've been meditating on that, and mm-hmm. I think my job is to love her unconditionally, to listen, and to follow her lead.
Right.
Because she's taking me to places I never thought I would be going at my age.
That's awesome. And that's wonderful. That is wonderful. You know, because that's so true. When we recognize, back again, using your word, the gift or the present that we were given. And that's how I look at, you know, and you've heard me talk about this before. Back in my day, people were saying, well, it's an illegitimate birth. How in the world can a child be illegitimate? I mean, I just never understood that. And so that's what I put forth in pride and whatever, whichever way you came, you were meant to be. Whatever date you were born, that was your purpose. You were here for a purpose and fulfill that. I call it that dash between your sunrise and your sunset to do God's purpose here and on earth. And I'm here to help you, support you to do it in any way. And because it's so amazing, and you know it already, when we talk about for us being birth moms, when we get that energy of somebody speaking into us of who we are, you are wonderful, you are empowered, you are beautiful, you are all of this and that in a bag of chips, you know, you can do anything.
Absolutely.
You can do anything. And so it's that encouragement that's given. That's what I was looking for. Yvonne, from my parents and whatever.
Yeah.
We're not sorry, but we're here for you. For whatever they could be there for. When you ignore someone, God is saying, you're not even worthy for me to even respond to you.
I know. My gosh.
Yeah. And so I took that. Well, I'm still talking. Y'all don't have to listen to me, but I'm still talking. as I said, I think I said it earlier today, is if I, you know, when I, you know, drove myself to the hospital, came back after 3 days and walked in the house, nobody asked me for it, whether I had a boy or a girl. I have a son, you know, so whether hear it or whatever, I acknowledge that. Yeah, this has been great, Barbara.
Thank you so much, Yvonne. I appreciate this.
You've been listening to Birth Moms Real Talk podcast with Barbara, the platform where birth moms will share their story, share their journey, share their pain, their grief, their trauma to help you overcome this lifelong journey, whether a birth mom, adoptee, adoptive mom, all of that to help you in that situation there. Tune into our podcast, give us reviews, submit your story if you're a birth mom to have you on the show. Like, do a like for our Facebook page. Join our Birth Moms Real Talk Village, which Barbara, you're a new member of.
I am.
Yeah. And we're going to have our first Zoom. We do a monthly Zoom on the fourth Tuesday. We're actually reading Primal Womb now. So we're a village of healing to help each other and all of that. So I encourage all birth moms. I get a lot of emails, people saying they love the podcast, support us. This does take money. You know, my company is a sponsor of it. But we want you to come in as a Patreon supporter, as well as birth moms join the village. So we will see you next time.
Thank you, Yvonne.